Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, everybody. Another edition here of the Auburn Undercover Podcast on the 24/7 Sports Network. My name is Nathan King. It is currently Sunday morning. Recording the, of course, reaction show. Auburn was dismantled last night against Penn State in what was a pretty surprising final result there inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. It was 2:30 on CBS. Big atmosphere that lasted for about a quarter and a half before Penn State started deflating things inside Jordan-Hare Stadium as the first Big Ten visitor in the history of the stadium. They used a 17-0 third quarter. Obviously, they were helped in a big way by four turnovers for Auburn, and it ended up being just a completely dominant victory for the visitors from State College. Of course, I'm joined here by my esteemed colleague, Jason Caldwell. And Jason, there's been so many callbacks. Most of them are statistical to things that happened in this game, and the last time they happened was the 2012 season. I've only been covering this team for 5 years, but that was certainly the worst I've seen Auburn play at home. At least, you know, you see them play bad against like San Jose State and stuff, but to be torn apart like that, really sort of methodically there in the second half, I wonder for you, you know, you've seen a lot more teams, especially playing at home where normally Auburn can kind of make it happen and normally doesn't get, you know, run off the field like that. Wondering what your perspective was after that game of just how bad that one stacks up in terms of, you know, Auburn at home over the past 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, I went back 50 years in my lifetime today. And of course, you know, people have kind of brought back up some different games. I mentioned 1980 against Tennessee. They lost 42-0 at home. And you know, that was one of the games that you know, it brought back memories of. I was 8 years old, so it was a little bit different in that scenario. 1987, I was in the upper deck for Auburn, Florida State, 34-6. That was a game that was a little bit similar to yesterday. Auburn turned the ball over a good bit, but that was a really good Florida State team, and that was an Auburn team that finished 9-1-2, but finished playing their best football at the end of the year. Those are two games that come to mind, but then the other ones were 2001, Alabama at home, 31-7, is forever be known as Black Friday, because it was an Alabama team wasn't very good, and they ran all over Auburn in that game. And then, obviously, 2012, the Texas A&M game is kind of the benchmark for bad football games for Auburn. I hope in my lifetime I don't ever see another one that bad, because that Texas A&M could have scored 100. I didn't get to that point yesterday, but it was a different reason. And it kind of, it does a little bit remind me of 2012, because once it got to 24-6, I just could not envision Auburn scoring 25 points. And so I'm like, the game felt like it was over with, even though you're down by three scores. That's where I'm at right now. It's been a continuation of things that have been building up for the past 4 or 5 years, really since 2017 for Auburn football. It starts on the offensive line. People want to go straight to quarterback. They went straight to quarterback the last 3 years with Bo Nix, and it wasn't straight to quarterback. And now people are finding out it's
you
not
called
straight.
It a couple weeks ago, by the way.
Yeah,
you called
it's not straight to quarterback. It's everything else surrounding that. It's scheme a little bit, but it's the lack of recruiting on the offensive line. Playmakers outside. Heck, I mean, Miami is in a straight rebuild right now under Mario Cristobal. And watching Miami skill players last night, I felt like they were better than Auburn's. And Auburn has recruited pretty well. Now, maybe we haven't seen them. We saw Landon King finally get a target yesterday, make a play. Javarius Johnson is still being used, really underused in my opinion, because he's a playmaker for this offense. But it still comes down to, teams are just saying, look, we don't believe that you're going to knock us off the ball. We don't believe that you can protect long enough that we're going to get after the quarterback. And Penn State said, look, we're going to start bringing it. And they did. And Auburn had no answer for it. And so it kind of felt like 2012 in that regard for this Auburn team. And I don't know where the answers come, because yesterday was a game where hey, I'll be frank. I think Penn State's an 8-4, 9-3 team at best. I mean, they're solid, but that was a solid team that did everything it wanted to for the last 30 minutes of that football game. And that's a bad sign moving forward, considering that you've got Missouri. I mean, they were terrible against a Kansas State team that lost at home yesterday to Tulane. So you want to talk about winnable games, this is as winnable as you got, even including Western Kentucky, moving forward. Now, I'm not saying they can't win them, but this is as favorable a matchup as you're going to have maybe the rest of the year coming up Saturday. And if you're Auburn, how much of those steps can you make to fix some things moving forward, and how many answers can you find?
I want to see if you remember this from our pregame live stream on YouTube. We agreed that this game probably wasn't going to go to a blowout one way or another for either team, unless, and your point was, unless there are a bunch of turnovers. And of course, Auburn turned the ball over 4 times. Penn State, credit to Penn State. I mean, Auburn made a lot of mistakes, but you talked about them playing a good game. No turnovers, establishing the run game. Overall, I think having a really good game plan on both sides of the ball. That was a great game by Penn State. And then Auburn certainly did itself no favors. The thing was, Jason, Penn State only scored 10 points off of the turnovers. It's correct. Not like they immediately turn them into points, but because you look at the first half, off the 2 turnovers in the first half, Shed Jackson's fumble and Finley's interception, Penn State's 2 drives off of that, 7 plays, 17 yards. So Auburn's defense did a decent job. It came in the second half where you put that, Brian Harsin kind of mentioned it, you put that in conjunction with them establishing a really strong ground game. All of a sudden, the game is entirely dictated. They are controlling every aspect of this game. They're getting the ball back over and over again. But Jason, this was the most turnovers Auburn's had in a Power 5 game at home. Again, shocker, since the 2012 season, they had 5 turnovers against Arkansas. They now have the second worst turnover margin in college football at -8. The only team that has a worse one is New Mexico at -9. New Mexico State, excuse me. They played in week 0. So they've played more games. So I think if you're looking at per game basis, Auburn probably has the worst in the country right now. Box scores are hard to go back 25, 30 years. I can't find one where Auburn has not forced a turnover in 3 straight games. It's just it's honestly a statistic and a trend for them that's getting pretty baffling. And I think when you zoom out, it's less so about, oh, it gives the team a short field. And it's more so about, no, it just allows a good team like Penn State to do whatever they want and dictate the game.
Yeah, you're right. And this is as much on Auburn's defense as is it offense. Obviously, you can't turn it over 4 times, but sooner or later, your defense has to put you in a position to score. And this Auburn defense right now is not doing that. They're not getting the ball back. They're not getting a ton of 3 and outs. They've got a couple, but they're not doing those things. We talked about it last week. The most concerning thing for me coming out of the San Jose State game, everybody said, well, the red zone defense was good. They only had 1 touchdown. The concerning part is they allowed San Jose State to get there 5 times. That was the concerning part, and it jumped up again yesterday. Penn State gets 5 red zone opportunities. They score 5 touchdowns with 5 rushing touchdowns. That's as bad as it gets. We've talked about all this all preseason, all going back to last year, how difficult it is to just run the ball in when you get in the red zone. Well, Penn State did that yesterday, and they did it with an offensive line. Like, again, I don't think this is, you know, this is not Nebraska from 1995's offensive line that showed up yesterday. That's a concerning, and there's no two ways about it. When you look at the way Penn State ran the football, they got some talented running backs. There's two true freshmen that you know played in that environment, and they basically said, "Let's go!" And they saddled up in the second half, and you know, get credit to their quarterback play. He once again did some really good things in keeping a couple plays alive. Finding a tight end again, you know, once again for Auburn against Penn State, the tight end became a huge weapon. But hey, here's the other thing: they put their true freshman in the game, and they threw the football and went down and scored a touchdown, even though they were ahead. I mean, I don't know the last time an Auburn team has done that, even in a blowout situation where they brought the backup quarterback in and said, "Hey, we're just going to continue to run the offense." They did it against Auburn, and meanwhile, we did not see a whole lot of fresh faces. We did a wide receiver, a bunch of them. They played a ton of wide receivers. We still didn't see a ton of reps on defense from many of those backups, even when the game got out of hand in the fourth quarter. These guys were, I thought they were worn down yesterday, and that's week three. And they still got four straight weeks to go before they get a bye week. It's turned into a long season pretty quickly.
Yeah, I might be on the Nick Singleton train the rest of the season. I might tap into my app and check some scores and see how he's doing for every game they've got, because he doesn't look like the fastest running back in the world until he starts to break away. Certainly talking about talent there. He's five star, can't coach that kind of talent. Like you mentioned, Drew Aller, the backup quarterback, also five star, came in, like you said, went 2 for 2 passing on that drive, and they move right down the field. I'll stick there just because that's what we're talking about at the moment. I talked to Owen Papo about this. It's so uncommon to play a team 2 years in a row like Auburn has with Penn State, and obviously they do with their division opponents every year, and not get a sack in two straight games against the same opponent. Especially early in the game, they were able to get some pressure. I thought, excuse me, in the first quarter, I thought maybe they were doing a better job of it, but Penn State adjusted over the course of the game. And we were talking about it before we started. It's not like Derek Hall and Ekwu Liotta had, you know, your two top pass rushers. It's not like they had bad games, but Penn State just had a much better method of getting the ball out and making things easy for Sean Clifford, easier, which is pretty crazy to say when you consider what happened to him on that first drive, his ability to bounce back like that, which Owen Papo said, look, you just got to tip your cap to a guy like that can pop up from that. But so we wondered and we worried whether the issues from the first couple games would, in terms of the pass defense, would permeate into this one. Not all of them did, but like you mentioned, able to get the ball to the tight end. Clifford's a great quarterback who got the ball downfield. I mean, Mitch Tinsley made two good catches on one drive that were sort of tough to defend, but you know, a lot of eyes will go to the offense, I think, like you mentioned, from people who were at the game. But then, like you mentioned, when you look at the score, 41 points at home is a pretty tough number to give up, even with all those turnovers.
Yeah, and you're right. When you even taking away 10 points, you go, you know, we take away 10 points off those turnovers, that's still 31 points from that Penn State offense
which no one expected them to get.
I'll tell you, every defensive player I've talked to in 20 plus years of doing this job said, look, it's our job not to allow those guys to score when the offense turns the ball over. That's, in the end, that's what it comes down to. Hey, it's our job. And this defense did not respond. They didn't play very well. At times they did some good things, but you're right. To me, when I watched them yesterday, I saw 29-55-0-4. DJ James, Owen Papo, Derek Hall, Ekwu Liotta. Those guys, to me, all I saw guys that were playing all over the place. And, you know, right now, do they have enough depth on the defensive line? We heard a bunch about depth in the preseason. We haven't seen much of it develop in terms of, you know, there's one thing to play a guy a few plays. You got to have depth where you can bring a guy in and that guy can make a play, not just go out there and be a placeholder. And it almost feels like that's what it is right now, is a placeholder for a couple plays on defense until we can get our starters back out there. That's not survivable. You can't survive in the Southeastern Conference playing that way. And if they don't have those guys, they're going to have to do something about it. Sooner or later, you just have to ride with and go, look, we're going to have to play some guys some other snaps. So our guys are prepared in the second half and in the fourth quarter of games, because it's now a continuing trend for this team. You know, Philip Marshall wrote about it, you know, right before, you know, Saturday, of fourth quarter issues and, you know, the way they haven't finished games. And that showed up again on Saturday.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
So we will circle around to quarterbacks, of course, because despite all the other issues, they, of course, weren't great. You had TJ Finley now with 5 total turnovers on the season. It was feast or famine for him, though. You know, you come away from it, and you certainly can't ignore the things he did well. You can't just act like those didn't happen, particularly in the first half. His ability to kind of read pressure immediately, slide in the pocket and move up and make, I mean, he had three third and longs in the first half that he converted with his arm. And then he took off for 18 yards on a scramble on another one. The problem is that when the combination of offensive line, the combination of a new starting quarterback, combination of those receivers from play to play, you can't find a lot of consistency.
Correct.
And so it was maddening for Auburn's coaches on the sideline. And obviously for everybody in the stadium, that they'd make these kinds of plays. They'd get down close to the red zone. They got to the red zone 4 times, didn't score a touchdown. And then you'd get a sack to push yourself back. You'd have a strip sack, or obviously Finley threw the interception. When Robbie Ashford comes in, his first drive does pretty well, takes Auburn down the field, then goes back negative 15 yards across 2 plays and then throws an interception. So, you know, the big takeaway from the offensive side, besides the O-line, if you're looking at quarterbacks, was, simply put, it's hard to see them beating a lot of somewhat competent teams with their combination of quarterback play. And I mean, they're probably 2 functioning wide receivers who can do a lot for you right now in Shed Jackson and Var Johnson. Other than that, in terms of the passing game after this one, just not a lot going for you, especially in that second half. Out of the gates at halftime, you didn't have any of those kinds of plays anymore. Any of those kinds of, oh, you know, step up, third and long. The pass rush was too much. The receivers weren't getting any separation, and it completely collapsed at that point. But obviously the big thing is turnovers, but at the same time, it ended up being, after what looked like a decent start for them on offense in the passing game, it ended up being anything but that. And by the end of the game, by the second half, when they were playing from behind, it was just roll out, throw the ball with Robbie Ashford, try to get the ball downfield. But there really wasn't a ton of separation, and you didn't have a ton of guys making plays in the second half.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Penn State last year in one respect, that I thought they gave up on the run way too early. Now, last year against Penn State, it happened in a 1-score game at the end of the game, and you kind of got into 2-minute offense a little bit. But, I mean, we've heard the coaches have talked about, look, we're going to run the football and be physical and do those things. Tank Biggs, we had 5 carries in the first quarter. 0 in the second quarter, and it's a one score game. It's early. Jarquez Hunter deserves his carries, and he got some of those in the second quarter, and that's good. But I mean, you look up the end of the game, and Tank Bigsby has less than 10 carries in a football game, and I don't care what the score was, unless he's injured, he needs those that many in the first half. That's who he is. That's to me this, and I hate to say it this way, but this team needs to shorten games. And running the football, trying to run the ball and establish a run, play two tight ends. If that's who you're going to be, and I wrote about it, early Sunday morning, I'm not sure what the identity of this offense is right now. You're playing two quarterbacks. You want to run the football, but yet you drop back to pass 50-plus times yesterday in terms of, and again, some of that happened, a lot of it happened in the second half, but, you threw a ball a bunch in the first half too. And I can you find out who you are? And we saw yesterday, dropping back to pass right now with this offensive line is probably not the best scenario to do a bunch of times in a football game, especially when the other team knows it. I'd be really surprised if you don't see 35, 40 plus carries from Tank Bigsby, Jarquez Hunter this week against Missouri to try to take some pressure off that. But it all depends too. Can you move the football? Can you score enough points? Because, Missouri and Eli Drinkwitz, this is going to be a big game for him. He worked for Harsin. He's worked at Auburn. I would imagine this one's been circled at Missouri for quite a while coming back to the Plains.
Yeah, you're pretty on point. 45 total dropbacks.
Yeah.
From what I'm seeing when you look at total pass plays and then obviously sacks. I can't sit here and fully calculate it. So in that second quarter, that was the most concerning part about the Bigsby situation, because Harsin was asked after the game and he said, well, we got too far behind, needed to throw the ball. It's 7-6. It didn't really add up. The answer did not really track, because it was 7-6 in the second quarter. It was only 14-6 at halftime. It's a one score game. They ran 18 plays in the second quarter. They ran the ball, designed run. They got one sack, but ran the ball 8 times, and Bigsby didn't touch the ball in the second quarter. And so, only 11 touches for him. I went back and looked, and that is the least for him, certainly since his freshman year against a ranked team. And you look at those situations, it was Kentucky when he was a true freshman. He hadn't even taken over the starting job yet. He was still in that rotation. Took him a couple games for him to realize, okay, he's the guy.
Yeah.
And then against Texas A&M when they were number 5. And if you'll remember, he was still dealing with that injury that he had against Tennessee. He was against Alabama. He was against Texas A&M. He had kind of that leg injury. He was still dealing with that against A&M. Other than those couple games, it is the least amount of carries he's had against a ranked team, least amount of touches against a ranked team in his career. You reference Missouri, and we'll close out by kind of not only looking ahead to this next game, but it's kind of unavoidable, and that Brian Harsin was going to get asked about his job security, and one game certainly isn't enough to sway that. But the bottom line is that it was already a high stakes season. If they were coming off of 8-4 and none of this stuff happened in the offseason, this is a crushing loss. It would be very deflating for this team, but I don't think there'd be any talk about job security. I think now it's the combination of this result, which of course we've mentioned over and over again, is the worst home game for them in a decade. Plus the ominous future of, you probably should beat Missouri. After that, who? You can probably, we were talking about this morning, Jason. I mean, the Mississippi schools sometimes, I think because they have a little less talent, sometimes maybe you can play well against them. Somebody like a Mississippi State, Leach, they'll just be badly coached one game. But now you're banking on things like that. I don't see a situation where you think in a game other than Missouri that Auburn is going to have a good chance to win. So you mentioned some of, in the past, over the past, 40 years or so, Auburn having some of these results, and in some instances they've been able to turn it around. It is not all doom and gloom immediately. I mean, we've learned over the years not to put too much into one game at all. I mean, anything can happen in this sport. Anything can happen for a specific team, but it is do or die now for this team in the sense that they have to improve immediately.
Yes.
They cannot emerge from this 5-game stretch. We talked about it all offseason. They need it to be 4-1 or better. 3-2 is staring you in the face from this five-game stretch at the beginning, because LSU came back and looked pretty good. And Missouri is not a given. You got to play well to beat them. After that, I mean, if you go 3-2, even two wins might be difficult to find on the rest of the schedule. So Auburn needs improvement. Simply put, I'm kind of talking in circles, but on both sides of the ball, and it needs to happen pretty fast, or else, I don't know, they'll probably have a different head coach next year. I mean, it's just, you got to put it simply.
Hey, I think back to 1988. It's something that I talked about with Quentin Riggins in the past. I've mentioned it here before. In that season, Auburn's offense really struggled. Reggie Slack was taking over for Jeff Berger. They had issues, you know, and they just couldn't find anything to get going offensively, and did some things. And early in the season, they played Mississippi State and said, look, we're just going to run the ball. We're going to run it and run it and run it. But that team also had a generational defense. When you're talking about Auburn defenses in the past, Auburn's had some great defenses. 1988 was the benchmark, other than 1957, those teams. And it, the game has changed. So even having one of those defenses nowadays still means, unless you're Georgia, that you're going to give up some points here or there. Can you do enough to win a few games by being physical, running the football? And if your defense can go get you a few turnovers, yeah. Is it enough to win a bunch of games? I just don't think it is. Sooner or later, you're going to have to make some plays offensively. You're going to have to tailor your offense. And is that Robbie Ashford? Is that going, hey, look, we're going to take the mistakes with the positives, a guy that can be a playmaker for us and make something out of nothing? Can you build on what he did? Do we see Zach Calzada? It's as up in the air after three games as any team in any season I can remember in a long time. It's going to be a big question week. We'll see if they got any answers, on Saturday.
Yeah, you said it. This is, you know, the hard questions. You don't want to avoid them early in the season, but before you get data against a good team, you know, there's no need to be, you know, pessimistic in those regards. You just kind of want to see what the team looks like. And like you said, now it's time to answer the hard questions. And now, you know, push is coming to shove pretty quickly. And they just can't exit this first five. They can't exit these first five games at 3-2. So whatever they need to do to win these next games. By the way, they just posted the spread for the Missouri game. Auburn opens as a 10.5-point favorite. I think that is a little surprising to some people. But
when we look at Missouri,
They did get killed at Kansas State. So
a team that lost at home to Tulane yesterday, but they turned it over 4 or 5 times. It's the same recipe when you're not good enough. Nobody's good enough to overcome a four or five turnover margin. But when it's that slim a margin for error, the team, hey, well, we can go ahead and say it to right now. I go ahead and tell you my preview for Saturday. If one team turns it over 2 or 3 times, they're going to lose. Either one. It doesn't matter who it is. And that's where these teams are. And it's that small margin for error. And, for Auburn, can you make up for that by running the football and getting better on defense?
For sure. For sure. Well, like Jason said, you know, we'll turn to Missouri. Be a lot to talk about tomorrow with Brian Harsin. That's for sure. Be a lot to talk about going into Tuesday's podcast. So anyway, appreciate everybody for tuning in here on this Sunday afternoon. We may, moving forward, maybe other than 11 a.m. games, we may do these reaction shows on Sundays, just because, and you might agree, Jason, I feel a little more refreshed and kind of have a better understanding, and it's a little better to sit on it. Whereas when we do these at midnight after a game,
sometimes it's tough to be. It's why coaches don't come in 2 minutes after a game's over with.
Yeah, it's hard.
You don't want to be reactionary, and I do think it gives you a little bit better sense of the overall picture of what you watched after sleeping on it for a little bit. So yeah, I like it this way.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, I say that to say, appreciate y'all tuning in, the Facebook and YouTube live streams. Thank y'all for coming in after church or whatever you're doing, getting ready for the NFL games on Sunday. We will obviously catch you guys Tuesday morning with the next show. If you guys are listening on our podcast feed, we really enjoy everybody tuning in, and we appreciate it. Please go leave us a 5-star review if you guys enjoy the show, if you've enjoyed it so far this season. I'm excited to move forward with the podcast for the rest of the year, because it's been a good time so far, and we've had a lot of fun with it. So should be an interesting year one way or another, certainly. But anyway, so that's our reaction show. Obviously, Auburn loses to Penn State 41-12, and things are going to get really, really interesting for the rest of the season. SEC opener next weekend against Mizzou at 11 a.m. on ESPN inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. The bumper music is by Beats by Mordecai. You guys can follow him Twitter, SoundCloud, Instagram, and until the episode on Tuesday morning where we talk about what Brian Harsin said on Monday and players probably on Monday as well, looking ahead to Mizzou. We'll catch you guys later. Everybody have a good rest of your Sunday and enjoy the beginning of the week.
Begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.